Welcome to Coaching Conversations, a weekly discussion of topics related to coaching and sport of volleyball at all levels. I'm your host, John Foreman, author of the CoachingVB.com blog and co-developer of the Volleyball Coaching Wizards Project. Let's dive right in. Welcome to episode 16 of the podcast. It's January 24th, 2021, as I record this, and I'm both excited and trepidatious as this is the last weekend before school starts here at Medina College, which means on the Super Plus side, the men's volleyball team gets to start practicing this week. And on the more trepidatious side, I also start teaching my first proper college class this week. So just addressing the second one first, because it'll be quicker. I've taught classes before. When I was at Midwestern State, I had to do, as the assistant coach, I had a teaching responsibility as part of my job. So I taught the volleyball activity class, not exactly the lecture class. Yes, I did give them an exam. Yes, they did have a final paper, but the vast majority of their grading was show up to class and participate, which was pretty straightforward. I also did, in my last semester there, I did do this online fitness course where most of the work was them tracking what they were doing during the course of the week. Not exactly a heavy workload there for me as a teacher. So this is my first lecture type class, which is going to be interesting. The topic is sports marketing and promotion. Never taught this before. I took marketing as a business student, you know, a couple times as an undergrad and then as in grad school when I did my MBA. But I've never taken sport marketing. I've done my fair share of sport marketing, although not at the kind of the bigger sort of corporate type level, I guess you could say. You know, we're working with professional teams. Most of mine has been more, probably call it grassroots oriented, working closer to the consumer level and with smaller organizations. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm sure I'll be learning quite a bit along the way as I prepare for my lectures and generally try to teach these kids some stuff. But anyway, of course, the exciting bit, yes, volleyball practice begins. Tuesday, we have to do our initial testing. We're doing the rapid tests. I think it's only about a little over half the team has to do it. Because the resident students were tested coming in, so they don't need to get it done again, at least not for this initial round. We've also got a guy who, unfortunately, I think a little over a week ago, tested positive for COVID, so he's not going to be with us for the first couple of days as he finishes up his quarantine period. And then, lucky him, he gets a 90-day pass on any testing after that. Whereas I think the rest of us, I think the policy is a quarter of the group every week, something like that, which has actually created a little bit of an issue this last week in terms of scheduling, because one of the rules that we've got for scheduling non-conference teams is that they have to have at least as strong testing and other procedure policy as we do in our conference. And it turned out that we were like mid-range of the recommended testing regime, which was 25 to 50% every week or every, I forget exactly what it was, but that's basically what my AD told me was these two teams that I had scheduled are on the low end of the range and we were in the middle. And that was the problem. I think one of them, we've kind of figured it out that we're gonna be okay. They're gonna do a little bit more testing, wrapping up. I need to figure out what's gonna happen with the other one. They're in the same conference, so you'd think we'd be able to work out a similar arrangement, but it's, you know, we'll see. I might have to reschedule, or maybe not reschedule, but schedule somebody else for that slot. In any case, but everybody's gonna be happy to get going. The first week. Meaning 7 days, we're allowed to go four times. We've got to put a day in between every session as part of the reacclimatization process. The 2 weeks after that, we can go 5 days. We have to give them 2 days off. as kind of continuation. And then after week three, we can go 6 days a week, normal schedule type, like type deal. The way it's set up is the guys, Thursdays are just impossible. There was no way I could fit a practice in on Thursdays with the class and work schedules. So that's going to be our day off for those, for that, for early, the early part of that. And then once we get into starting to play matches, I'm going to use Thursdays as a film day. We won't be able to probably go all together because there's only about an hour window where I could possibly do that. So maybe I can do it in there, but I'm thinking more likely to break it down sort of maybe positionally. We're going to play a bunch of Wednesday matches, or all our midweek matches are on Wednesdays. So Thursday is likely to be a pretty good film day in any case. And then, you know, we, I think right now our first non-conference is scheduled. I think it's the 24th of February, but that's the one that's in doubt right now. We start conference matches March 13th and then go pretty much Wednesday, Saturday, all the rest of the season until the first week of April, and then we go into a conference tournament. And there might be some adjustments to that because apparently there's talk about the NCAA tournament being pushed back a week. We had a conference call with most of the men's coaches in our conference the other day, nominally to talk about scheduling for 22 because we're going to add a team that's going to change the format. But this topic also came up. So there might be a tweak to how we run things this year. In any case, back on the court, looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing what the guys are going to be like. Obviously, at first few sessions are probably going to be a bit rough. They only did 4 1-hour sessions in the fall, and that was it, aside from a couple of workouts. So yeah, they haven't done a 2-hour session or something along those lines, probably since middle of March last year. So there's going to be some conditioning that's going to have to get developed in these early weeks. And I intend on building them up because we have 6 weeks before we have to play our first match. So we don't need to be killing them. Yeah, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, but it'll be fun. Actually get to coach. So on to this episode. This is the second in a row with Alex Porter from University of Essex in the UK. Alex and I, you know each other since my time in England. And I asked Alex what we wanted to talk about as a separate topic after having done the one on, you know, kind of distance recruiting last time. And he suggested the idea of mentorship. And as you'll hear at the very beginning, even he's not sure where this discussion will go, because he actually kind of intended it to be a kind of a fleshing out of ideas conversation. And I think we did do a bit of that. So hopefully maybe this will stimulate some thoughts in your mind. Certainly, as you'll hear at the end, Alex came away with a couple of action items for himself. And I can report for sure that he's done number one, at least in terms of the initial part of it. He let me know afterwards that he did, in fact, do that. How that progresses, you know, we'll see in the future. I would love to hear from you guys on this topic. How do we get more mentorship in coaching? Because this wasn't a whole bunch of presenting solutions and this is how we do it and all that sort of stuff. This was, all right, let's talk through some stuff and talk through some ideas and have a conversation. So there you go. There's the title of the podcast. All right. So hope you enjoy it. Hope you find it interesting. And I'll look forward to seeing you next time.
I don't know where to begin with it. It's going to be quite a rambling conversation, probably.
It happens.
I'm going to learn just as much from actually having this conversation than anything, because in my head, I don't have clarified thoughts either. So,
well, it's interesting that you bring it up, because it was one of the very early blog posts that I wrote, was the need to put mentorship into the process. And this was, obviously, I was about a year into being in England. So I was reflecting on what I was seeing in England specifically at the time.
hit a little bit comparing it to what I had seen in the States previously to that. But it was quite clear that there's a lot of similarities. I think the difference that we have in the States is the college game, where you've got head coaches and assistant coaches. So you have a very clear structure that lends itself toward mentorship. Doesn't mean it always happens, but at least the structure is there in place. You're working on a day-to-day basis together. The assistant coach presumably is at least partly there to learn from the head coach. The better head coaches understand that aspect of things. You know, I'm trying to help develop these coaches, and the ones that have big coaching trees, you know, beyond them are the ones that, you know, they end up turning over a lot of coaches because they do a good job developing them and making them prepared for the next step. When you get below that and you're starting to talk, especially in the juniors ranks, you get into a situation where in a lot of cases, people are just thrown in. It's like, hey, we need a warm body. Mm. So let's find somebody who knows a little bit about volleyball. Maybe they played before. Maybe they're just a parent. Don't know anything. Yeah. You get a few of those. And it's not just in volleyball. It's probably across all sports. Because I remember seeing it in youth soccer when I was growing up as a kid. There definitely isn't, in a lot of cases, a dedicated mentorship structure in that. There are some clubs I can speak to in the U.S. where you do have a structure created within the club that has mentor coaches or master coaches or whatever term that they want to use, who oversee either a collection of coaches or kind of are the ones that create the master plan for practice that is then executed by whatever they call the sub coaches under that. I know Mike Lingenfelter at Mount Siena, who's one of the people I interviewed for Volleyball Coaching Wizards, has a structure along those lines at that club. And one of these days, I'd be really interested to go someplace that follows that system and see how it's actually implemented and what they do beyond just, okay, this is how we deal with things in practice. Because it's one thing to say, okay, the master coach is going to create the practice plan and everybody's going to kind of use it. And okay, the master coach may go around and work with the individual coaches on what they're doing on the court. But does that carry over into match situations? What element of additional coaching education and development is happening around what's happening in the gym? So I've long wondered about that aspect of things.
And in our scenario over here, there's very few teams that have assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. So for us, it all has to be remote. And that's why I think that there should be. I don't know how it can be structured. There should be a system in place where even if it's, you know, newly qualified coaches, touch base once a week, once a month. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be some touch and base. Go, okay, what have you learned this last month? What didn't work? What did work? Have you considered this? Mm-hmm. And just to provoke those thoughts, because, you know, actually, in my opinion, the first year as a coach is the most scariest time ever. You're suddenly in charge. Everyone's looking to you to have all the answers. And as you just said, they're probably just a parent. Yeah. That's, oh, no, I'll help out. I'll do it. And it's so daunting because there is no 100% correct answer. There's just different grades of correct or incorrect. And that, so I think it's something that would be really, really valuable for the sport. And in fact, any sport, but for volleyball to develop the next generation, there needs to be some mentoring system. And my only worry is that actually that takes away from the now, which is generally what everyone's concerned with.
Right.
If I give up 5 hours of my time to do that. That's 5 hours I could have been spending on coaching or recruiting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It will do me good in the long run. But how long run?
Right. Yeah, it's and you know, the other side of the equation from the coach who comes in and knows nothing, essentially, and kind of realizes they know nothing, are the coaches that think they know because maybe they were a prior player.
Yeah.
So they're more in a situation of they don't know what they don't know yet. So with, you know, with a coach who's never really done this before, is completely, you know, thrown in at the deep end, you can say, okay, well, the answer, the quick solution there is education. Give them some books, watch some videos, go to a clinic, whatever. Do your certification. The other coach, they don't have the same perceived incentive to go do the education because they don't realize that they're not as smart as they think they are. Just because you are a good player and understand the game doesn't mean you can coach it very well. So some sort of mentorship is incredibly important for that sort of person to get them on the right track of saying, no, you need to upskill here. You need to learn more about this. And you can't, you know, treat all the other players like you were, like they're you, or like how your coach did it in the past. So
there can't be a one size fits all. There has to be multiple options. And I think that's probably the reason why there hasn't been a system put in place, because there are so many different variables at play. But saying that, actually, you know, even going on a coaching course, you know, they don't cover everything for everyone. I can remember doing my level one, and the woman who I was partnered with for the 3 days, you know, she saw within a couple of hours, she's like, you're just here for a piece of paper, aren't you? You know what you're doing. I was like, mm-hmm. But I couldn't go straight to level two. I had to do level one. And so, you know, maybe in mentoring coaches, actually, there should be 4 options or whatever it is, 3 options. And that's the other thing as well that I can never quite get my head around is, actually, you probably get to a certain point where it's not sport specific anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas movies, it probably does have to be specific, and because they're probably going to have, you know, everyone goes down this whole technical route to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to a stage where you start to plateau and you realize, actually, you can do it this way or that way. They're both okay.
Yeah. Your description of level one over there is similar to my experience in level one over here. If you played volleyball before, you know the volleyball skills. So when I did level one with the USAV program, pretty much it was just about teaching the skills of the game. It wasn't until level two that you kind of got into systems of play and more complex aspects of things. So level one was super easy. The best part of it usually was that you were on the court. You know, you're involved in all these games and drills that the instructors are using to demonstrate stuff. Yeah. So you're just having a blast, you know, playing with a bunch of other people. But you don't necessarily learn anything.
No.
You know, at the end of the two days or whatever it is, you get your little certificate and on you go.
Yeah, ours is all about, you know, is it a safe environment?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think we went up to 4v4. Maybe the last hour we covered 6v6. But it was all about, you know, is there water on the court? Is anyone injured? How do you talk to a group? Making sure that everyone's in front of you and no one's left behind you. How do you project your voice? And it was not necessarily, it wasn't much, if any, technical content. It was all how to coach safely.
Sure.
I can't actually remember what I'd done on my level two apart from 6 visits. It was with Jeff and Carol, I think it was. And nearly everyone on the level two was like National League, like Super League Division One player.
Sure.
So it was done slightly differently to what I think the normal level two was. But again, we just played lots of games. So we were happy.
I didn't do the level two. I mean, I didn't do one or two over there. I went straight into three because I'd already done one and two in the States. And two was definitely more interesting. I mean, it was... Okay, now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of this stuff. And I was still a relatively new coach by the time I did that. because I was eager and motivated and all that. So I did it, I think, a year after I did level one, which is, I think, the minimum amount of time that you're allowed. But in nowhere in there is that kind of continuing oversight aspect of it, which is exactly what we've been talking about. The only thing that came close to that for me was in level three with Volleyball England, where you had to do a 10-entry journal, which is how I started doing journal entries on my blog that I continued to do ever since. And you had to have somebody come oversee you during a practice. Now, the journal thing was super easy. Just did it on the blog, no problem. Having somebody come to Exeter to watch me coach was a big problem. Nobody wanted to do it because it was, I think, Jeff in Bournemouth was the closest person. He really wasn't interested in coming 2.5 hours on a Tuesday night or something like that to watch. So I ended up having to video my practice one day and send it into Richard, who was the head of the coaches commission at that point, for him to do it. But at least he gave me some feedback. Now, he looked through it, made notes about different things and comments about different things. And I was like, okay, this is useful. It'd be nice if there were more of this. Level three in the US, there really isn't that. I mean, in a lot of ways, it was more intensive than the Volleyball England one. Just, I think, in the way that they present and they challenge, especially when you're on the court doing stuff. Because there were several times when you were supposed to be designing games or drills, and they just pick at you. Why this? Forcing you to justify your decisions and rethink about, you know, well, this would be a better way to do that than that. But there's an outreach project that's kind of the main capstone element of that. But there is no sort of follow-up element of in terms of coaching. So that I felt like was a shortcoming.
Be interesting to know if other sports do have that structured mentoring system in place, or whether the outreach part of it. I think it's just, it's like a checkpoint almost, and a nudge.
Yeah.
That keeps you honest and keeps you focused. Actually, I do need to coach myself to get better. Because otherwise you start thinking all about the players rather than actually my own development. You know,
AVCA's got its, I forget what they call it, but they've got a mentorship program where they'll match people up. And I'm curious to know how well it works. They've usually have a social during the convention where mentors and mentees can come together. And I put in as a mentor one year, several years ago, and I actually got connected with a guy who probably had more experience than I did. I was like, how's this going to work? And after our first exchange, I don't think we ever connected again. Like, that was just kind of it. So I'd be curious about other people's experience with that.
So I've just joined a mentoring scheme at work. Nothing to do with sport at all. And it's the first time it's ever run, and it's across 3 universities. And the idea was to pair people with people from different institutions at different levels. I'm actually paired with someone from Essex, just because the way the numbers worked out. But I spoke to the person who originated the program, because it was aimed at academics. Sure. And I'm like, I'm not an academic, but this is who I am.
Well, you sort of are. I mean, you're doing your PhD now.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's what I said to him. I said, look, you know, I actually deliver more teaching hours than what these professors are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just focused on one module. I'm also focused at developing these as human beings.
Right.
And the guy was like, technically, you don't fit the criteria for this, but I want you involved. Like, you're perfect for this. It's just you don't tick that initial thing.
Right.
And I've got my first meeting tomorrow.
It does seem like the teaching community does a much better job with the mentorship sort of thing than the coaching community does.
Yeah, and that's my point. I've got quite a few friends that work in as high school teachers, and they all have mentoring roles, and a few friends are social workers. And they have, what do they call it? Can't think, but there's a certain name for it. Every week, they have to sit down. It's normally their line manager, but not always.
Right.
And basically unload and just get it out of their system of what they've seen and dealt with that week. And their mentor's there not to provide solutions, but just to go, have you thought about this?
Sure.
Have you looked at it from this point of view? Did you consider that? And again, just nudge them and guide them along the path, not to show them the path.
Even the PhD process itself is essentially a mentor-mentee, if done well. That's essentially what it is.
But I want to know how we can implement it in volleyball. How can we make it a worthwhile experience?
And
how can I be mentored as well? I mean, I've taken on someone this year to be a co-coach. And he's not as experienced as I am, but there's very few people in this country that are. And that's not me trying to say that I'm one.
You could name them on, you could probably name them on 1.5 hands.
Yeah, just because there's not that many coaches that are delivering on a daily basis. So, this person that we're kind of working in, it's not done in an official capacity, but we are touching base with each other constantly. And it's thought-provoking. I'm trying to provoke his thoughts, and likewise, he comes at me with some other things. I'm like, I've never thought of that before. I didn't want to let him be like head coach of one of the two teams. I was like, do you know what? Let's go co-coach. I can give you a little bit of leeway to you to do what you want to do, and I'll help you with that, but you're running it. And then the other bits I will work on as normal. And then as you get more comfortable, then you can take a little bit more and help guide him along on that process. But there's got to be a structure.
Yeah.
There has to be. The volleyball in England, anyway.
You and I have definitely talked about the idea of mastermind groups or something along those lines, which aren't necessarily mentorship groups, in not mentor-mentee relationships in a traditional sense. They're more peer mentorship ideas, where you get some people with, you know, kind of at a similar level, but with different perspectives on things. To be able to work through problems and present ideas to each other and stuff like that. And it was one of those things that's on my to-do list. We've got to find a way to do this. Because I think some people do it already. And actually, Beth Lanier talked about the Pac-12 coaches like over the summer last year. Meeting with each other on a regular basis, trying to work through what was going to happen with schedules and the season and all that sort of stuff. And just the fact that they were connecting with each other and being able to talk through all this stuff in a cooperative sort of way, as opposed to constantly competing with each other, which is the normal case, I should say, was incredibly valuable. Now, I don't know if anybody would want to do that, or not a lot of people probably would want to do that on a recurring basis, because of that rivalry aspect of it. It's like, well, I don't want to share my strengths and weaknesses with, you know, somebody. Let them try to figure it out on the court sort of thing, which is why you probably have to, maybe different conferences or different parts of the country or something along those lines. And the other thing that I was just thinking about as you were talking about was those of us who have the fortune of being able to coach full time in a university environment or wherever, we've automatically got a certain cachet to our name, deservedly or not. I remember this when I was an assistant coach in my Brown days. There were high school and club coaches that had been coaching for multiple times as long as I had been coaching, who thought I was a big deal because I was a college coach. I'm like, are you really? I've only been doing this for, you know, 6 years. You've been doing it for 36.
Yeah.
I think there's a few things I could probably learn from you. But it exists. Just it's this perception that because you coach at the college level, you know stuff. And to be fair, some of you do. So it makes sense for those sorts of people to be getting out into the community in their areas to engage in some of that mentorship, that teaching, or even just talking shop with people.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that I'm moving to Buffalo, where I've never lived before. I wanted to be able to engage in that sort of activity pretty much straight away. Obviously, it's not been doable, but it's as soon as it becomes realistic, I'm all for it. It helps promote my program, helps me engage in the community, develop more social connections in the community where I'm a complete outsider and haven't had a really much chance to become an insider at all. But also, you know, to help out, just to bring people along and grow our sport and raise the level and all that sort of stuff.
I spoke to Marv Dunphy about a whole host of things a couple of years ago. And he was
That was when you were at the ABCA, the men's convention?
Yeah. And he was, I'm going to butcher the story. I can't really remember the exact details of it. But he was like, when they started out, he would have, what do you call it, coaches' chalkboard meetings on Friday nights. And after a game on a Friday, go back to the offices and they'd watch the game again. And they'd have local coaches come and chat with them and ask them questions. And yep. That's what I'd really like to do, like just open door session. Just, hey, any local teachers or coaches want
to learn
or ask questions, come on in. But he was like, if you can impart your knowledge on them, they will pass that on to their students who will be hopefully become your students in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already got a better understanding of how you want to do things.
Yeah.
By the time they get here, but you're playing the long game by doing that, which is, hey, the short game over here is pointless anyway. Like you've got to aim longer term.
Right.
So whether it's something like that has to happen. But again, how would that be structured? What, over here, every senior academy has to have a monthly coach's corner with their local volleyball clubs. Like you've also got to get the buy-in from the local clubs or the coaches of local clubs. Remember, they're all volunteers. They're not getting paid. So they've got to leave work early on a Friday night to go an hour and a half to sit and watch a training session when they could have been at home with their kids. Like I think once you prove its value, then I think the ball's rolling and actually it will build momentum. It's trying to demonstrate that early value to those coaches.
Yeah. I think we need to use technology better now. I mean, we're a lot more comfortable with it than we were before, and we have to take advantage of that.
Agreed. I think the other thing as well is actually not all mentors and mentees know they've been a mentor or a mentee.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's conversations like this, where actually, you know, I feel I learn a lot from you all the time. I'm not asking you direct questions. It's just the conversations we have.
Yeah.
And I try and work out things that from your experience that might be beneficial for me. Because there's no point in me asking you, like, well, how do I do this? Because you're not living my path, my journey. But you may well have encountered that.
Mm-hmm.
Similar environment or that similar context before. I don't know what the science behind it is about whether having an official mentee-mentor relationship is better or whether a natural one that just flows. Because some people, it might be, it goes between the two. One week, one of us is the mentor and the next week is the other one. I don't know. I don't know the science. That's probably something I should really read up on.
Yeah, there would potentially be very different because you'd assume that the official one would be a bit more structured, and the relationship would maybe be less personal.
Hmm.
You know, so in that context, maybe there's a bit more objectivity, but objectivity isn't always the best thing necessarily because you could potentially lose out on some deeper implications that you would know from more connectivity. So, something to work on.
Based on what you know of England and the structure of things, if you were going to do something short term and then something long term to try and create a mentor system, what would be your quick win and what would be your long term idea?
I think quick win would be to develop something technology based, use Zoom or whatever platform, to initially create a coaches community, to get the coaches in the country generally more engaged with each other. Because my impression of it, and this is admittedly a bit from afar right now because I'm not in it the way I was before, is that the only community that tends to happen is the conference that VE runs annually or whenever they can get it in, like the one I was at in 2019. I'm guessing they haven't done one since then, given the circumstances. And those sorts of events, just like the AVCA, obviously it's a much smaller scale, but those events are important. Being able to meet with people individually and in groups is important. But to your point, most coaches over there are not paid. To go to one of those things means giving up a weekend, plus the travel, plus probably staying overnight in a hotel, one or two nights, the cost of the event itself, which is relatively nominal. So there are disincentives to getting people to do it. And let's face it, even in the States where a lot more people are getting paid to coach, the vast majority of coaches are not attending the AVCA. Even the virtual one. The virtual one's attendance was actually lower than I believe most of the in-person ones have been recently. I don't know what that means for the finances of the AVCA because obviously the cost elements are different. So, but there's, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of volleyball coaches in the U.S., tens of thousands certainly. And 2,000 to 3,000, I think, is normally the number that actually go to the ABC every year. So you're missing out on, you know, 90% or more of the coaching population. So how do you engage those people? Obviously, England is regionalized just like anywhere else is. It just so happens to be that the overall region is much smaller than the overall U.S. region. So you don't have to deal with time zones and things like that. So you can get everybody in a consistent block of time. So that would be kind of the first point for me is let's develop an online community where people are interacting with each other on a fairly regular basis in some way, whether it's online clinics or discussion groups or, you know, something like that. And then I think that can then lead into the longer term perspective of you can identify the folks that are likely mentors, you know, that are going to be interested and capable of doing it on a sustained basis. And it's probably going to have to be somewhat regionalized in terms of being able to do anything kind of face-to-face. But with the tools, you know, if people can record their practices and share it with each other, you know, on one-on-one meetings like this, then you've got the makings of, hey, you know, we'll take a look at yourself and your body language right now while you're doing this. Notice how that's different from what you want to project. And, okay, you need to be more conscious of this. Or, all right, what was the feedback that you were giving to that player in that circumstance? Any of these little things that a more experienced coach who's got that mindset to look in and not just focus on the surface elements of it. So, you know, use the community to identify those sorts of people, work with them to turn them into, you know, good mentors, and then start creating that funnel of, okay, let's get people connected with these folks so we can lift everybody.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Technology. Well, what do I think? I think that the senior coaches in this country need to do a little bit more, not loads more. And by more, I mean more of passing on them information as opposed to delivering more. And whether that's through, and it'll be different in different areas. So whether that's having a coach's corner once a week, once a month, or whatever, whether it's having a virtual meeting with PE teachers,
right.
Whether it's working with once a month, all the under 18 club coaches in the country come together for a passing masterclass, for example. I think there needs to be that information that people have needs to be passed on. And it's not that we've been protected, far from, it's just there's never been a structure in place to deliver or disseminate that information. Like, you know, you've got the AOC and you've got the AVCA that both have online resources, and Gold Medal Squared, and those three are great tools in the States. And as always, the onus is on the individual to go and learn and watch that. And I think as an individual, we give ourselves excuses not to do stuff all the time.
Yep.
Whereas actually, if you're part of a group, I think you have a bit more of accountability. That if it's, for example, at the last eights, the under 18s, right, part of this is that actually you must attend 5 masterclass coaches sessions.
Right.
Likewise, for the interregional squad coaches, you must attend 5 of these. And, you know, some of them are like rolling their eyes, kind of, oh, I know what I'm talking about, because they're at the top of that first peak on the Dunning-Kruger. Yeah. And and then they'll go, oh my God, I don't know anything. And but you've got to show them actually there are other ways of doing it. If you had asked me 7 years ago, I'd think very differently to how I think today. That's just called being a human being, isn't it? We learn as we go along. We need to find a way to disseminate the information we have quicker. And I think, and you know, from this conversation, I've already got a couple of ideas that I'm going to follow up straight away. One of them involves another coach. I'm more than happy to help them and help deliver. I'm happy to help advertise it. I'm happy to do the grunt work for it. But he's the expert in that field, so I think it'd be best if he leads it, or he's the figurehead for it. He's one of the most successful junior coaches in our country in schools. At a school level, can we get him to create a teacher's masterclass, a virtual one, how to teach volleyball in PE?
There you go.
Like, here's a 3-year program for you. It sounds extreme, but it's not, because actually it's 6 weeks of class.
Right.
Do that over 3 years. Like, this is how you teach it. These are the key pointers. To my knowledge, that resource is not out there. I may well be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're not too.
So if we can get that going, that I think would spread the word more, that actually when I'm learning how to be a volleyball teacher, not a coach, because they're teachers in school, I felt valued. And they wanted to support me in my journey. And then they'd be like, what? How did you do that? I didn't know they'd done that.
Right.
Can I sign up to it? And then you get, like the previous conversation we had, you know, that it's that friend of a friend.
Word of mouth, yeah.
Yeah, word of mouth that passes it on. And then more people go, actually, this really helps me with my basketball coaching or teaching, because I'm now understanding I need to know the certain cues, and I need to know why we're doing things, and I need to know actually, is it applicable to an 11-year-old? Why are we doing 6v6 with an 11-year-old? Why are we doing 5v5 in basketball with an 11-year-old? Actually, you can change the game to be more conducive to their needs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's something that I'm going to speak to. And you probably know who I'm talking about. I'm going to speak to him tonight. Actually, I'm going to pick up my daughter from nursery, and I'm walking there, and I'm going to give him a call on the way.
All right.
And see if it's something we can get off the ground. Like, why not? There's a no better time to do it. Do it now.
Okay. Listener challenge.
Yeah.
Get out there, find somebody, some way that you can create some of these connections and facilitate some of these relationships.
Yeah.
I think it's a good place to end it.
So my two things are, I'm going to connect with him and see if we can get some of the teachers. And then the other thing, what I think we should do is the senior coaches in the country just need to give that little bit back of finding one other person each to mentor.
Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes on the website, coachingvv.com, for links to further information about this episode. You'll also be able to find the complete back catalog of prior coaching conversation. While you're there, you can sign up for my mailing list. Members find out in advance what conversations I'll be doing next and can submit questions if they like. If you'd like to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/coachingvb. Patrons get early access to every episode, as well as other special benefits along the way. I'm always interested in hearing what you think about coaching conversations and ideas you might have of topics and or guests for future episodes. You can send them to me at john@coachingvb.com, tweet them to @coachingvb, or hit me up on my Facebook page, Coaching Volleyball. All the best until next time.